Ian.
Sorry.
Well, Ian could be John.
Okay, here we go. Speaking into the English mic. English, English, English. Check. 1, 2. English, English. Hey, hey, 1, 2. English, English. Hey, hey, 1, 2. English. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. English. English, English, English. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. English. English. English is good. French?
That'd be better. Yeah. Got it. We got Spanish. Can we have Spanish to English, please?
Okay, I'm now English. English. 1, 2, 3. And I'm leaning into the mic. I'm going to lean. I'm about normal position for our translators here. 1, 2. How are we doing? That's English. English. 1, 2. English. English. Are we good with English? English. English in this booth. 1, 2. 1, 2. I'm going to swap over to the other desk here. Here's English on the other desk. 1, 2. 1, 2. 3, 4. English. English on the second desk here. 1, 2. Hey, hey. 1, 2. 3, 4. Hey, hey. Are we good?
We're good. Was I doing when? I've done all of them. Which ones do you want to hear? They should all. Sorry? So you're listening to the English feed, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is just Steve checking the Spanish.
Just leave it there, Yeah, copy, mate. It's at control.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Steve is checking Spanish, which is me. And Steve can check French. Ho ho. Ho ho, French. Oh, fromage. Oh, fromage.
Check, 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 check. 1, 2. Check. 1, 2. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
the Skype call. We got a. One, two, three, four, five.
No, it's me.
No, in fact, we're going out of our way not to do that. No PowerPoints, no speeches. We're just going to go back.
Really? Wow, no PowerPoints.
One, two. Hey. One, two.
Check, 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 check. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. No problem.
two, three, four, five. This is a test for the Adobe chat room. One more time. This is a chat for English streaming.
Sometimes we're all driven beyond that.
For all you people standing in the back, we have empty chairs up here. We're just solving a couple of last-minute problems on our remote participation, and then we'll get underway. Okay, folks, I think we're going to get started. We want to make this session a little bit different than many of the other sessions you may have attended at ICANN. We want this to be as loose as possible. We want it to be as interactive as possible. We want to entertain as many questions. In other words, very unstructured, very participatory. That's what we're after here. We've got a great panel talking about security. This panel is virtually unmatched. Let me introduce them, start at the end. Jeff Brueggemann is Vice President of Public Policy for AT&T. In his role, he's responsible for developing and coordinating AT&T's public policy positions on the Internet, technology, and broadband issues. He leads the development and coordination of AT&T's strategic policy initiatives related to advanced technologies and emerging services such as broadband, security, cloud computing, and converged IP services. The gentleman next to him, I have no idea who he is, so we'll skip him. Dr. Stephen Crocker, the chair of ICANN's board of directors. He's also the co-founder of Shinkuro Corporation, dedicated to the deployment of improved security protocols on the Internet, primarily DNSSEC. Steve is an Internet pioneer who helped to establish the protocols for the ARPANET, which, of course, became the foundation for today's Internet. Next to him, Jeff Moss. He's our Vice President and Chief Security Officer. Jeff is better known as Dark Tangent, somewhat famous or perhaps infamous hacker. In 92, Jeff founded DEF CON, the largest hacker community and gathering in the world. And then 5 years later, he started Black Hat, a series of technical conferences featuring the latest security research. In 09, Jeff was appointed to the DHS, Department of Homeland Security in the U.S., their advisory council, which provided advice to the department. Is that basically right, Jeff? It's a long bio. I had to really boil it down for you. Next to Jeff, Debbie Monahan is the domain name commissioner for .nz, the New Zealand ccTLD, and as such, she's responsible for the oversight of the NZ domain name space. She also is responsible for setting the policies, authorizing registrars, and monitoring the performance of the registry, NZRS, against the service level agreements. The famous Dan Kaminsky has been noted, he's a noted security researcher, that's kind of an understatement, for over a decade, has spent his career advising Fortune 500 companies such as Cisco and Microsoft. His claim to fame is finding a critical flaw in the Internet's DNS, called appropriately the Kaminsky bug. We really want to thank you for that, Dan. He led to what became the largest synchronized fix to the Internet's infrastructure of all time. Next to him, never mind, we don't care about who's next. No, Dr. Paul Toomey, another former ICANN CEO. He's the managing director of Argo Pacific, high-level international advisory firm which assists companies to build and grow global Internet and technology businesses. Paul was our CEO from 03 to 09. He's a former chair of the World Economic Forum's Global Agenda Council on the Future of the Internet. So, as I said, a pretty distinguished panel. Again, we want to really keep this as loose as we possibly can. I'm going to ask the first couple of questions, but when you guys are ready, go to these mics, and we do have a remote participation person here, Margie. She's going to let me know when we've got questions from people joining us online. And I just want to throw up the first question to you, Steve, just for the sake of clarity. What exactly is ICANN's role when it comes to security?
Yeah, I appreciate the short, easy questions. I'm pausing because I'm editing out all of the temptation to say it is not XYZ. ICANN's role in security stems from its mission to coordinate and oversee the unique identifiers, which is sort of bland code word that includes but isn't limited to the domain name system, top-level portion of the domain name system. But it includes the addresses and signed number, autonomous system numbers that go with that, and the publishing of the IETF protocol parameters. And then in our involvement in the marketplace with the GTLDs, the registries and the registrars, trying to oversee a little bit of sanity and clean operation of those. Security is a big word and encompasses a lot of different things. People read various things into it, and Internet security is, in my experience, not a precise enough term because it includes everything from phishing to TEMPSAT, extortion to espionage and a variety of other ills. Some people view spam as an intrusion that is a security violation. Other people view harmful content because it stirs the emotions of the populace as a security issue. And our mission is really very narrow in there. So We care an awful lot about the stability of the root server operations, and we care even greater amount, because we have a very direct role, in the quality and accuracy of the information that's in the root zone. And that's a very specific and very narrow area. We care a lot about the operation of the domain name system generally, which is why we're very supportive of DNSSEC. And on the consumer side, if you will, we care a lot about the operations of the registries and the registrars, so that there's sort of limited amounts of fraud and abuse from that area. Jeff Moss can say quite a bit more about all of that.
Which kind of leads me into the next question. Jeff, you and I were talking before this session began, and you were mentioning to me that you can see a possible disconnect between what ICANN's mission is in the role of DNS security and what our perceived mission is. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I'm mostly interested in, since everything ICANN does, we're very community supported, and we do have a limited role and remit. As pointed out by the SSRRT just recently asked ICANN to publish what we believe a short and concise view of what is the ICANN's role and remit in security in SSR. And that comment was out to the public, and it's in draft form right now, and so we're getting ready to publish all the community feedback. But it's really interesting, the difference between what ICANN internally thinks its role is, the difference between what the community and different members of the community have different views. And so when you say that ICANN is the global or the coordinator for the global DNS system, it really hinges on what the word coordinator means. And if you're a country that has no root servers in it, and there's some interruption in your service, you might think I'll go to ICANN and talk to them about it. Right? They're the global coordinators. The buck stops with them. You talk to root operators, buck doesn't stop with ICANN. It stops with the root operators. And so there's sort of this disconnect. And the more that's clarified, the better it is not just for ICANN, but the better it is for the community to understand what the expectations are. And I think with improved or increased attention from governments, the more we can clarify this, the better we're going to be. Because the more ambiguous this is, the more confusing it will be for not just the GAC, but for everybody. So.
In our discussion, when you and I were talking before this session began, and we were talking about the anonymous threat, which was, we established February, I believe, February of this year, you brought up a really interesting point, I thought, and that was, you were saying there are a lot of people, when that threat was being publicized, and they're going, okay, we've got to get somebody on the phone, we need to call the internet.
Yeah, there was one government that's like, picks up the phone, get me the internet. Oh, that's not going to work. And so you start researching, well, who's the internet? And to them, they thought ICANN was the internet. And we have this thing that's published that says we're the global coordinators. And so that must be who you call. And I was talking to one of the root operators, and I said, yeah, isn't that an interesting situation to be in? And he said, yes, I don't envy you at all. Because you have it written down that you're the coordinators. I don't have it written down that I'm the coordinator. So all I have to do is best effort. I'll try really, really hard to keep my service up. But if I fail, I tried my best. If you fail, you know, it's written down on your piece of paper, not on mine. And so it's like, interesting situation to be in.
Paul, since you were CEO, have you seen security concerns as regards ICANN change, or perhaps better stated, have you seen the expectations change?
Well, a couple of observations. First, starting off where Jeff just left off, I think you find that in the period of that ICANN's been in existence, the interaction with the root server operators has been one, I think, of attempted engagement and cooperation. I think the root server operators, if they'd actually understood what the intent was, at least I think of the US government in 1999-2000, was much more interventionary than actually occurred. And so they have been doing, obviously a good role in a coordination, in a coordination role. I applaud this new charter for the RSAC and for the root server operators coming closer into the ICANN process. for a couple of reasons. For the reasons that Jeff just pointed out, the reality is about that part of the infrastructure that there needs to be an umbrella. There needs to be a space in which all stakeholders are involved, if necessary, if crises were to occur. And I think all stakeholders involved in thinking through what resilience means in that space. So the question that was put out for public comment about should ICANN look for a process for transitioning a root server, I think the answer to that is absolutely. And the root server operators obviously should be involved in that, but they should just get on and do this, because I think time runs out. I'd rather have it
happen under our time control than having it, you know, propounded on us due to an emergency.
You seem to be talking about that like it's an inevitability rather than, I mean, you both seem to have this sense of it's got to happen.
So I think it's only happened twice in the past, and it sort of just happened. There wasn't really a procedure. I think one was through an acquisition of another company. And so in the future, you could imagine another acquisition of a company. You could imagine a situation where a root operator just decides, I've done this for a long time, I'm retiring. Well, then does he hand it off to his buddy, or does it come back to ICANN, or does it go on eBay? I mean, who knows? And so it would be really nice to have some clarity and predictability there.
Debbie, how do you see, from your position, how do you see ICANN's security role?
Well, as a CCTLD, ICANN doesn't have an operational role in our security aspects of our CCTLD. So I suppose in that respect, what we would seek is, I agree there needs to be some coordination across, and ICANN is in a good position to bring across multi-stakeholder views and come up with some good guiding principles, some guidelines, some documents, which a CCTLD can look at and either choose to implement some, all or none, because ultimately they will run the CCTLD in a way that suits their country. Just picking up on the discussion about the root server contract, we've signed an exchange of letters with ICANN, and that actually includes ICANN, if you like, securing and stability of the DNS. Now, the question is how can they actually sign up to that when they actually, there's no documents that they can point me to show on what basis they're actually mm-hmm. being run by. And I think that, to me, one of the roles for ICANN is to look where the gaps actually are and to have documented processes in place, which pretty much is how a CCTLD actually runs. And CCTLDs can actually, if you like, share some of our stuff because, we're operating in the same space in quite often a more nimble and quick way, and we're one of the key stakeholders that ICANN actually has. So to me, it's they don't have an operational role in running .nz or the security aspects of .nz. But having said that, I think when IANA used their database to alert about Configure, we then as a registry put our own solutions in place that suited us for that particular set of circumstances. So I think raising the flag and raising awareness, great, leave it then to the registry to actually figure out how they want to run it themselves.
Dan, I want to hear from your perspective. What is the greatest threat that you see right now to the DNS?
There's an awful lot of people who want to mess with DNS lately.
Yeah.
They're not just hackers. I'm pretty concerned with the rise of denial-of-service attacks against DNS infrastructure. We've been defeating them for, I don't know, a decade by just throwing bandwidth at the problem. And the other side is now throwing bandwidth at the problem, too. And it's turned into a substantial arms race. And it's turned into a matter of scale. Between the denial-of-service attacks that I see growing at exponential rates and the actual compromise of registrars and registries, what I'm starting to see is a lot of force being applied on a scale that is larger than we're all comfortable with. But what I mean by that is there's a lot of desire for independence in the DNS space. We've got our rice bowls. We've got our little areas. This is what we do. and, you know, other people can maybe advise if they feel like, but this is our space. And that works up until the point that you have surprisingly powerful actors exerting force, at which point you need surprisingly powerful pushback. And that is actually a role that I really like seeing ICANN take. There are needs for coordination. There are needs for organization. The response to Anonymous, and I was telling Jeff earlier, threatening the DNS may be the most valuable thing Anonymous ever did. It was like a vaccine. There was no actual threat, but my goodness, did it create a immune response. The DNS got a huge amount more stable because of a synchronized threat where there was no actual threat. So I'm hopeful. I do see that there are significant threats out there, but I do see that there is a willingness to respond to those threats as a coordinated group. So that's kind of my opinion on the situation right now.
Let's deal with that issue of coordination. Shortly after I started working for ICANN, they dealt with Conficker, the Conficker mm-hmm. threat. And for me, as a neophyte coming into this world, it was amazing to see all the various segments kind of join together to fight that threat. Is that the model for a future sort of defense against that type of threat?
I think there's no other model. We're stuck together. Like, the scale of threats that we're seeing now are on an order of magnitude more than what we would have originally liked them to have been. Like, we have to work together to fix some of these large things. Like, Conficker and the attacks that are coming, no individual registry, no individual registrar, no individual organization can deal with them alone. We are actually going to have to coordinate, and honestly, the time to set up those coordinations is before the attacks actually start.
Yeah, the benefit of the Anonymous threat was actually all the coordination work that happened. Mm-hmm. So what will you do when the attack happens? And those preparations can be used for, you know, any future threat. And I want to echo what Dan's saying. The thing that's been keeping me up at night is the size of these DDoS flows. They're getting kind of crazy. At the time of the Anonymous threat, we were looking like, well, what's the biggest flow that anybody's seen? And then that will be sort of near our upper threshold. And it was 132 gigabits back then. So that's a pretty big flow. So the attacks against Wall Street last week, 212 gigabits.
Jeebus.
So you went from 130 to 212 in less than a year. So I don't like that chart. And I don't know how you defend against that unless you just have lots and lots and lots of, you know, anycast and lots of bandwidth to localize the effects of these flows. Because if they can aggregate, you're in trouble. And the way that some TLD operators, all their servers are in one country, sometimes in one locality. Well, by the time all that traffic aggregates in your locality or in your country, it's all over. You've got to limit this stuff. In my view, you've got to limit it as far away from home as possible. And so I would like to see more coordination around a unified strategy for limiting 200, 300 gig flows.
Sir.
My name's Ernie Daniel from Affiliates. We're certainly concerned about the increasing denial of service attacks. But there's I think some additional factors coming into play now that maybe weren't known or weren't being used in the past. In the early days, denial of service was often due to a fault that was discovered, like some of the early ones with the SYN attack. So the solution for that was to patch your TCP stack and get the software out there and upgrade it. That strategy has become a lot more difficult with the botnets because it's extremely difficult to identify all the client machines and get them patched. But we've been dealing with that, or we've known about that issue for some time. But I think there's another factor that I'm not aware of, that how much it's been addressed, which is beyond a fault in the system that you can repair. It has to do with the design of the protocol, where by using the protocol in the way it was meant to be, you can actually get a reflection of a huge magnitude beyond the input. And I know that DNSSEC in particular is prone to this. I'm not sure what other protocols might have this underlying fault that either is known or hasn't been discovered yet. And I'm just wondering what's going on in the industry on the part of looking at strategies for dealing with denial of service that is dealing with not patching things, but dealing with design faults and protocols.
So DNSSEC is not particularly special in its amplification. There have been some claims, but what you actually see in the field is that when amplification happens, it doesn't even bother with DNSSEC. They just use straight DNS, and it's fine. At the end of the day, we have not tried to... At the end of the day, our fix for most denial of service has just been, let's just have more bandwidth than the other guys do. We've got money, clearly maybe they don't. We'll just brute force our way out of this problem. And at the point where we're getting 212 gigabit flows, brute forcing our way out of this problem is not scaling anymore. And that's kind of the theme that I see, honestly, for the next decade. Like, we have a lot of solutions we're comfortable with. Not all of them work once, you know, we're 4, 5, 6 orders of magnitude more than what we were originally designing for. So do we see protocols getting redesigned? Do we see networks getting redesigned? If we do, that happens on the technical layer, but it also happens on the policy layer. People have to agree, yeah, maybe we should look at interesting things, like how do we deal with spoof traffic? What do we do about requiring protocols to validate that they're communicating with a peer? How relevant is it that they are communicating with a peer when you're in a botnet and the attacker actually does control a few million machines? One of the most interesting things about Conficker, by the way, is to this day we still don't know what they were trying to do. We know they broke into a bunch of stuff. We knew they held on to that stuff, you know, as hard as they could. But what they were doing, we still don't know.
Steve, you wanted to add something?
Thanks, Brad. I agree with everything that Dan said. Dan, you mentioned a couple of things, reflection, and it doesn't depend upon DNSSEC. You can use DNS alone. Underneath all of this is the mechanism that's being exploited with these reflection attacks is false source addresses. So packets get sent into the net aimed at a DNS resolver with a fictitious return address. And in fact, the return address is the target of who you're trying to attack as opposed to who the sender is. The agreed upon mitigation of this and reduction of this is to check the source addresses upon entry so that ISPs should not be letting some user or some machine send in a packet that is clearly misadvertising where it's from. It goes under a number of rubrics. There's an RFC that describes it, a best common practice document, number 38. And there's gathering attention, not as much as we'd like, but gathering attention on trying to implement this across the ISPs. And I think one of the things that will bubble up for attention is an assessment of where we are on that process and how effective it is or it isn't.
Jeff.
Well, I certainly don't have anything to add on the technical issues, but I did want to point out that I think these attacks are also creating political concerns that we all need to be aware of, and that is the worst-case scenario, an increasing desire by government to have one place to go to call the Internet to get these problems fixed. And having been on the security review team, while we were conscious of making sure that ICANN didn't overstate its role, we also are concerned, and we're concerned that governments, in particular as cybersecurity becomes a bigger issue on their radar screen, are not understanding what is happening today and potentially looking for more of a government role in being the solution to this. And we see this in terms of public-private partnerships and other issues. So I do think while we are wrestling with all of the technical issues, we also, to some extent, it's an opportunity to show that the The lack of centralized control is not a flaw. It's actually a benefit to the way the internet is designed. And ICANN, I do think, plays a critical role in being a helpful, not just a formal coordinator, but a really important body that brings together technical expertise and all of the operators of the infrastructure in a way that can be very helpful.
Paul?
Can I just sort of add to that clarion call? There's an old phrase about read the signs of the times. And one of the things that I've got worried about more this week is the US Secretary of Defense's statements 2 days ago or 3 days ago about pretty clear warnings against third countries about having infected American critical infrastructure, statements about their cyber warfare doctrine about to be released. I think it's pretty urgent, frankly, for the ICANN community generally, the broadly defined, to really work through clearly the multi-stakeholder approach around being around things like the root servers, how they're operated, the root servers and how they're going to be, you know, any potential change, issues around DNS, issues around, I want to talk about compliance around registrar behavior, et cetera, and be clear about the roles around that, because I am concerned that we will find ourselves in some situation where a offline conflict is going to produce an online conflict. And governments traditionally have had a concern about the internet where most of the concern has been really around content. But in the rise of cyber espionage and then potentially in cyber conflict, it is absolutely about the networks and the infrastructure. And if I, and my concern is if the ICANN model and community is around multi-stakeholder and transparency, then there needs to be a lot of attention, I think, paid around this issue to preempt if there's a crisis happens, because if it's not clear when the crisis happens, well, hell will break loose.
I'm just curious. In the scenario you just raised, you said that the terrestrial, the conventional sort of conflict might arise followed by the online conflict. Why do you phrase it like that? Why couldn't it?
And I think it's very important to understand that and to make that very clear. When I hear about that there are countries which are have their name servers all in one country, I know countries, they have only one uplink to the world. And I can tell you, if this uplink is gone, the country is gone, and is disconnected. So I think it's very important to understand and distinguish between what is DNS-related and what is not DNS-related, which lies actually in the infrastructure itself, the infrastructure as it lies down on the let's say, the cabling. So when we talk about the cabling, it's like a street network. You can't guarantee that each street in Africa is as possible, as easy to drive as each motorway in the U.S. Of course not. It will not. And of course there will be cases where you actually can't reach that village in Africa through the internet. And obviously, so we should really understand what is DNS, what is not DNS, what is TCP/IP, what is TCP/IP related. When we talk about the protocol, it's a packet switch protocol. When we talk about DDoS attacks, nobody actually would argue that if you say in the mobile world, if on Christmas evening everybody phones his parents and only let's say 10% actually get connected, that it's a DDoS attack. Of course not, but 90% couldn't get connected because it's within the protocol that is a sort of point-to-point connection. So the protocol guarantees a point-to-point connection. We are now have within the internet a packet switching network that is underlying the protocol in the protocol. If there is the packet switch, that if too much people puts too much packet on the network, that there is sort of that it doesn't work anymore. We have to make the people understand that, and we shouldn't tell them and explain them that we can't solve the problems, and each and every problem. We have to address that, we have to distinguish that, and I think that is very important to be transparent in what is possible, what is not possible, and what is DNS-related and what's not DNS-related. That's my comment.
So I was in this amazing meeting. I was like talking to 200 engineers. I'm like, all right, guys, how many of you write software that depends on DNS? And two hands go up out of 200. And I'm like, let me rephrase my question. How many of you guys have software that expects that it can take a string of text and get back an IP address so that you can make a network connection? And then 198 hands go up. Everything's a DNS problem. It's this really interesting foundation in which we build these protocols that expect that they can communicate across organizational boundaries. And the only reason that these protocols are able to do this is because the DNS gives them that capability. What we are, in fact, seeing is that a surprising number of actors, hackers but not just hackers, are realizing if they manipulate the DNS, they can manipulate all of these larger protocols. And this can be for reasons of cyber war, this can be reasons of activism, this can be reasons of some teenager having fun and fraud. There's a pile of reasons to mess with the internet, and it turns out that DNS is this really nice point to poke at. You know, if just because, imagine an entire country's uplink goes down, that doesn't mean that every single site in that country is down. Sites in that country might be hosted out of the country, might be hosted globally via grand Anycast system. But you attack the one DNS layer and none of it matters because no one can find those addresses. So we have this interesting inflection point or targeting point for a lot of attackers where it's like, hey, however else things are going on there, if you hit here, you get to break everything built on top. And, you know, you see a lot of people who have various interests in changing the net. There are these four standards, security, sovereignty, privacy, piracy, various forces that are trying to change stuff. But there's one force that is really the one thing that I think binds every single person in this room, which is reliability. We've built something amazing here. It's got to keep working. And it's remarkable how many people not in this room aren't considering the reliability story.
Sir. My name is Rick Wesson, and thank you all for taking the time and taking the arrows
good to see
for
you.
Security. I think that the conversation that I've had many times in the cybersecurity realm has been tracking more towards cyber warfare and the duality of this kind of online capability for a kinetic effect or vice versa. And that's very scary to a lot of people. And I think that ICANN is in a unique position to help coordinate many of the aspects of the internet and keeping it stable, reliable, keeping it up. I found that if we could pivot the conversation from security into health, we would find that there's so much more latitude for a healthy internet, for bringing systems into a healthy place. We see it in our nation with weight. And there's many more more friendly ways of having a discussion about how the internet works in a positive way that benefits the global community, regardless of your national or sovereign status. And so what I would like to see ICANN do is create an effort that pushes cyber health or the health of the internet or a WHO. The WHO does an enormous amount of collaborations within the health community because they have the relationships, and that's what ICANN has. I think that's where its value is to the global community. And to remove ourselves from the conversation of war, I think, is a healthy thing for populations in general. Thank you.
Sir? Thank you. My name is Simon McKellar from Nominet, UK. As a question for the panel, we talk back on DDoS. We tend to, I think as DNS industry experts, tend to focus on a sort of monolithic approach. We must fix the DDoS problem by, you know, as you say, bandwidth, whatever else. We've been working with the ISPs in the UK to look at how do we reach out to the customer and try and fix the DDoS problem at the customer's end. But the problem we have in that debate is there's a perceived lack of a trade-off of privacy. You start helping the customer understand what traffic they're sending. By the very nature, you're starting to monitor and look. So a question, I guess, Jeff, probably it's a good one for you, actually, you know, as an ISP. You know, how do we tackle that issue of helping customers to improve their own DNS health without them feeling that we're invading their entire privacy?
Yeah, that's become a big issue generally, not only for the consumer-facing issues, but also the information sharing and finding ways to improve the sharing between private sector companies and with the government. And I think what we've tried to do is address that with structural protections to make clear that if we're going to have to get into an individual issue with your computer or your service, that obviously is a very heightened privacy concern. But a lot of my understanding from our security team, a lot of what we're talking about is signature threat information, traffic flow data, and other things that can be shared in a way that is not, does not raise that personal privacy type of concern. And I also think, the issue of the, what may be a trade-off in terms of how do we address these threats in a way that preserves the open internet, is going to be a big issue as well. And I think there, again, the best answer in my mind is to have a transparent solution so that there aren't any surprises in terms of what ISPs are doing. So,
I want to ask a follow-up question in that regard, Jeff. On the with the collaborative effort that took place when the Conficker threat arose, part of the effort there was a public relations effort. There was actually public relations people that were brought into the fold. I'd like to ask you folks, you keep talking about transparency. Obviously, that's important. How do you balance the benefits of transparency with the threat?
One of my concerns is, as technical folks, we sometimes ignore the layer 8 problem of politics. And so sometimes there are these second-order issues where if a technical, let's say a name server fails, technically, okay, there's a fix for that. But what are the second-order consequences with the political side? If that gives fuel to a certain group that says you're not doing a good enough job, we should probably move that to another forum where we'll take it more seriously. And while that's not directly addressing your question, there's these one degree off or one angle off situations where you might think that, well, it's a technical problem, we don't need PR people. But in the end, it actually was very useful.
One of the things we're involved in is actually a cross-sector effort to try and educate consumers more on the interesting point was the health analogy, not just how to keep your machine safe, but also how to just have good, safe practices in using the internet. And it's actually got some of the U.S. government involved, as well as the browser companies, the ISPs, and others. And our thought was that even as ISPs, we can't solve this alone. There are a lot of companies and a lot of places where we do touch consumers, and they just maybe have not been adequately informed. And I think a lot of frustration on their part is just give me the 5 things I should be doing. And that's not an easy thing for all of us to articulate to them. If you're going to tell them to take some action, it's not always clear exactly what that is and how effective it'll be. So.
Paul? I think the political processes value transparency around process. And that's because they've learned it over a long period of time. So if you take the conflict example or any other, there's inevitably some part of the dealing with the crisis where, frankly, a degree of privacy and not being transparent about what you're doing today or tomorrow is important when you're dealing with an adversary. But what's important is for people to feel like that they know what the process is that's going to be followed, that's been transparent beforehand, and that there's mechanisms for interacting with it, and they do want to see PR and communications take place at an appropriate level. And I think there also needs to be transparency of who's engaged and how's involved and who's the players. And this is my general call. I mean, this is not just about conflict. I think this is about all of the ICANN community's interactions around DNS and DNS security. It's thinking that through, because this layer 8 problem, it's just going to get worse. And with due respect to sort of that engineering type response, which is like, you know, we'll sit around and talk about the engineering issues and we'll sort it out ourselves, that's a spiral downwards. It's not a spiral upwards. That won't be an acceptable answer in a time of crisis. So there's a distinguishing transparency of process and mobilization is different than transparency during crisis itself.
Debbie.
I think, too, though, we've got a responsibility to try and find solutions even amongst the issues. So taking Configure, for example, the approach we took in .nz
Debbie,
was...
lower that mic just a little bit. We're barely hearing you.
The way we did it in .nz is that we actually blocked the registration of names that were on the list. But then we set up a solution, a process with the registry and the registrars that in the case of a legitimate registry and actually wanting one of those blocked names, we had a way of actually, if you like, releasing it and actually sending the process through. So I think how you handle it is actually a key aspect. We could have closed everything down and said, no, go away, but I believe we've still got a responsibility to keep running our CCTLD in a way that actually suits the registrants. And so I think knowing what the issue is, there are quite often solutions that can be found in innovative ways.
Yeah, Dan?
I believe the focus of PR for anything to do with security has to be on action. You can't just announce something is bad. If that's what you're doing, then you're, I'd say, wasting people's attention, but you're losing an opportunity. The time for PR and security is when there's an action that you want people to take to make the internet a safer place. Like, if you don't have a direct action, do this, install that, you know, build this. If you're just informing, I think that's not the best use of time.
Being proactive rather than reactive.
You want to basically be telling, don't just announce, look at this big problem. Don't even just say, look at this big problem that we're working on. I think the most valuable PR in security is, look at this big problem. Here is a thing that you can do. Here is, if you agree with what we are saying, this is the action to take. I believe you have to focus on actions. That's my own bias.
Jeff? I just want to make a quick comment, Dan. I think we need to do that with governments as well as consumers.
Yes, yes.
I think there's a tremendous amount of fear and anxiety about cybersecurity, but frankly, they don't know what to do, and their inclination is probably going to be wrong, in some instances. So maybe what the technical community and those who operate the infrastructure, we haven't done a good enough job articulating where can government help, what can be the role, what are we already doing that you don't need to do, articulating that more. But I do as agree with Paul that I think the risk is getting is growing, that the level of concern is rising and that they're going to start to take some actions that will be a concern. So I would just add that we should put them in that category of giving them some action items.
Sir.
I think that it is very important that we learn from other industries on how to react. And I agree, I disagree with you, Dan, wholeheartedly. Look at any health problem that we've had in the world since we've learned how to wash our hands. Look at AIDS. AIDS was a problem, and it was discussed for many years before we learned how to solve it. Think about any disease that we've had. Look at genetic engineering and the way that we're dealing with health and genes. Take those as ways to deal with that very similar situation. We have global problems. These are not our lands anymore, and they affect entire populations. It's a different approach.
Health is an interesting analogy, and the thing I like most about it is that it is non-confrontational. Health is obviously something we all want, but it is a different class of problem. We banned biowarfare pretty much. Like, it's a technical thing that's possible. We could be exploiting other people's genes, other people's bacteria with viruses. We just don't do that. But in security, oh, no, people are sending out crazy code all the time. So it's a different class of enemy.
Well, we'll have a beer over this later.
Sir, you've been waiting a while. I appreciate your patience.
Thanks. My name is Mike O'Connor. I'm one of the co-chairs of the DSSA, which is the DNS Security and Stability Analysis Group. Many of you know the genesis of that. I won't go there. I like a lot of what's going on in this room. I love Steve's kind of throwaway comment right at the beginning that said, let's not describe what ICANN doesn't do. Let's describe what ICANN does. I love Paul's coordination, transparency, think this through in advance stuff. I love anything Dan says. I want to circle around the document that's in the setup materials for this meeting, which is the revised statement of remit for ICANN. I don't love that so much. I think it's, and I'm a member of the ISP constituency, and I wrote a long, cranky thing. And I won't repeat that either, because it was three times as long as the statement of remit. But I think we've got to get better at sharpening that up. I think that the role and remit of ICANN, the fuzziness in there is all the way up at the bylaws. You know, it's things like, what do we mean by ensure? Because you can say ensure in a lot of different ways. It's certainly not something we can hash through in a meeting like this, but I love the fact that we're having that conversation, and I would encourage an upward view. You know, I know that the tactical, technical issues are really important, but we've also got to start figuring out how we work together. Who does what in the DNS ecosystem? Thanks.
Let's follow up on that. Are we defined by a lack of clarity at this point? Jeff, you're leaning back. Did you have something to say?
I think Jeff said it all. He said, I'm not taking that one. I think Mikey's point is right, that the words that are in the bylaws are perfectly sensible for the time at which they were written. And I wasn't there and wouldn't take part of it, but I would imagine that they felt reasonable. And if one had asked more detailed questions, the answer would have been, well, let's see how this works out, or leave it to the details. And now it may well be time to revisit and provide better shape to all of this. And as I said earlier, ICANN isn't the sole operator in this space. There's a lot of other players, governments, of course, industry, what we traditionally call the ISTAR partners, the regional internet registries, the IETF, the root operators for sure.
Good afternoon. My name is Alejandro Pisante. I'm from the National University of Mexico, UNAM, and the Internet Society chapter of Mexico, ISOC Mexico. Can you hear me well? At the beginning of this year, Jeff Brueggemann, who's on the panel, Simon McCalla, who has already come to the microphone, and myself, together with a great team of other people from all stakeholder groups, delivered to ICANN the stability, security, and resilience review. Some of the measures proposed there we already see being implemented, which was for me very plausible, very, very, very good. I don't see the discussion today grounded as far forward, I think, as we would like to see. For example, instead of speaking only of security and attacks, actually speaking of a more integral picture of risk management, which we very much insisted upon. The difference that would make, I mean, this is not come back and complain, yeah, you didn't do what I wrote, the team I was part of wrote, but that the discussion could be taken several steps forward. ICANN is put in a situation of asymmetric warfare or asymmetric conflict or engagement in many ways. One of them is that everybody wants ICANN not to do something until something happens, and then almost the same people will look to ICANN and say, who was asleep at the wheel in ICANN and why, because that's the reason this happened. So if you have a massive DDoS against the DNS servers, just to pick on the example that Dan especially has been insisting on, you have a massive DDoS. Well, ICANN is supposed not to interfere with ISPs, with ccTLDs, with registries, with nobody for preparing for that, because everybody is a single independent actor in the multi-stakeholder model. The moment that DDoS puts a couple of root servers down to their knees, even if they are one-man operations in an attic, which was expected to bring them down to their knees, there will be an outcry. Where was ICANN and why didn't ICANN prepare for this? So I think that there's, I would hope to hear some report on progress on that kind of stuff. And to make it very concrete, and risk management at all layers, including political levels, I think that we should look at, and I would love to hear some opinions from the panel, how much has the risk increased for massive mischief? I wouldn't concentrate only on the DDoS, but also on other stuff, including political damage to ICANN or its allies, more visible allies or assumed allies. How much has this risk increased over the last weekend with the U.S. Department of Defense announcement of cyber Pearl Harbor scenarios? How much does that announcement alone spark the interest of groups who would like to at least test the infrastructure for its resilience?
So I really like your view of risk management, and I believe that's ultimately where this needs to go. One of the things I asked about was, what is the expected growth rate in DNS queries? So you sort of have a baseline of if we're not growing capacity. Well, just to go back to the DOS example, one of the only ways out that I see is you have to scale. And I don't know yet of another technical solution besides throw more bandwidth at it, throw more Anycast instances at it. I'd love to know a cheaper, easier to manage solution. But if that's the world we're going to live in, what would normal growth look like? And from what I can tell with IPv6 quad A record queries, mobile device queries, DNS prefetching to load pages faster for Chrome or whatever it is, over the last couple of years, the number I've heard is about a 30% growth rate in DNS queries. Now, that's not necessarily against the root, but the software on our networks are generating more queries. And you're shaking your head, and you can give me a better number later. But there is a double-digit growth in normal traffic queries. So if we're not scaling at that rate, we're essentially falling behind. And I don't ever hear a lot of discussion about what the projected growth rates are in the future. Do we need to plan for 50% growth capacity per year? And it seems like those numbers would help tie into a larger, long-scale risk management framework. But what I hear is nobody talks about these things out loud because they don't want to tell the attackers the limits of their capacity. And so it's sort of a chicken and the egg problem.
Jeff? Just to add to that, to what Alejandro said, I mean, I think part of what we recommended also was that ICANN needs to have the right structure and process in place to deal with that issue. So I think the board risk management committee is a good step in that direction. And our thought was, you know, these discussions need to happen. You need to have the right people in the room. They shouldn't be public. But part of it is building it into the way that ICANN operates so that you are having the right process in place to do that, too.
Sir.
So Tom Daly, I'm the chief scientist at Dyn. We're a DNS operator. I like what the panel has to say so far. I mean, I think you guys are focusing in on the right issues. I would like to put the thought in front of the panel that one of the advantages that we do have that is often ignored is the effect of caching. Going back to the analogy to World Health, the nice thing about a 200 gig DDoS across the internet is that you know what's happening and you know who's sick and you can generally go and fix those people. I would be curious, though, if the panel could comment on the new vector that we've seen just in the last 6 months of attempts on the registries and the registrars themselves, because I actually think that's a much, much bigger problem, because within a given population of people, you don't know who's sick and who's not sick like you do in the case of a DDoS.
Thank you. I mentioned this a bit earlier. I actually was at a meeting with ICANN a little while ago where I said, hey, you know, registrars and registries are getting or going to get broken into, and this is going to become a growing problem. And let me tell you, I was not popular at that meeting when I said that. But it's true. I mean, everything's getting broken into, and registrars and registries are absolutely not the exception. There's no magic reason why their web servers aren't going to get hit either. And we are seeing consequences of this, the Google.ie break and a couple of others. I'm afraid on two fronts, and you actually hit my biggest fear, which is, yes, you can go ahead and you can do a very visible, I'm going to change this record and everyone can see it changed. But you can also not. You can also selectively decide if you've broken into a registrar or a registry, or at least for a registry, for these guys, we're going to go ahead and give polluted records. And for those, for everyone else, they're going to get the nice and real thing. We've seen this transition happen in the rest of security, from giant worms that affect the world to very targeted what's called spear phishing attacks. And I think that transition, not only are we seeing the transition from a unintelligent denial of service to, you know, a break-in into registrars and registries, but I think we're also going to see very targeted use of that enhanced capability.
This is, sir, you look like you have a follow-up.
Well, this is it's a well-known problem, and the security team at ICANN, we spend a bit of effort in our capacity, under our capacity building umbrella, working with registries and registrars that are asking for help. Helping them devise policies and procedures to deal with these, as well as technology solutions. So I wasn't in that meeting, but I would not have been upset. but it is a known problem. I don't think there's a coherent industry response.
Go ahead, Phil.
I think we ought to go up a step and think about this very carefully. Picking up Alejandro's point about, you know, ICANN doesn't do this and ICANN doesn't do that, and we're all independent actors until the crisis happens, and then ICANN gets blamed. Part of what we've got to pick up is, what is ICANN? And, you know, myself and others have contributed to the building of an institution, and part of the building of the institution has been building a executive, and there's been building of funding and all those good things. But we mustn't forget that the heart of this, if you go back into the late 1990s, and we talked about formation of this community, it was that it was to be stakeholders coming together and engaging. And I think this is a classic topic moment where we need much more interaction at the stakeholder level about each of them talking to each other and coming to a clarity about what is it they're wanting to see. I mean, if there's concerns about what the registrars are doing, or not doing, then who's talking to them about that, or who's sharing that backwards and forwards? Similarly, you know, the root server operators, you know, if the governments have got a concern, have they spoken directly to them? You know, how do we use the internal process? I notice Michael's here, and I think there's somebody from Portugal in the back there, but there's not too many government people in this room at the moment, unfortunately. But I think we've got to, at this particular issue worries me enormously, is that we've got to, and I'm particularly thinking about the crisis events that I think are going to happen, is that if we don't engage constituency to constituency about what's our common view about this, what's our common approach to this, what's our common approach around transparency and process, if what we finish today and elsewhere is simply to say, well, Patrick and his team should go and do X, we've completely missed it. And I think what the reason that engagement's necessary is there needs to be a common sense of what is this truly multi-stakeholder and truly transparent approach to it, because when the crisis happens, as Alejandro points out, and the blame starts going around, there needs to be a way to say, this is the pathway forward we have all agreed, because otherwise the alternative, you know, everybody loves plan B, right? When the crisis takes place, everybody loves plan B, and if it becomes clear, well, look, plan A didn't work, it's that bunch, they're useless, there will be a plan B, and we'll all get broken in that process. Panetta's talking in this email, this speech, about a cyber Pearl Harbor or a cyber terrorist attack, which could be worse than the thing that happened in terms of impact on the United States of what happened at September 11. I'll only point out to you, after September 11, the United States community paid $1 trillion to go to war. Right? These events can have really massive change pendulums. And so I hope we keep this dialogue going in a way which is about the stakeholders talking really practically to each other about what their common view is, not just what is it we think a small function is going to do.
Debbie?
I made the point earlier on that about the coordination role of ICANN, and that CCTLDs have got a role to contribute here. And a lot of CCTLD registries have taken and spent a lot of money putting steps in place to, if you like, protect their registries from attack and other such things. And I'm aware also that a number of CCTLDs are putting in place greater security policies and things to actually try and protect or make sure that the registrar's systems are protected. I know in .NZ we've employed a manager of security policy, and he's going to be identifying, if you like, the registrar's gaps at the front end, because between the registrar and the registry, that those technical things and those standards are well and truly set, and any issue of a vulnerability and they're not allowed into the registry. And I think we need to actually turn around and put it more at the front end as well, so that the front end of the registrar's systems are key. And I know that we'd be keen to contribute what we learn and also learn from others. And so when you talk about ICANN, I talk about the ICANN community and all the range of stakeholders, because I don't think any one person's got the one answer. And I'd like to be able to pick and choose perhaps what .de's done or .uk and perhaps .com or whatever, and cherry-pick the best things of those to get the optimum solution for .nz. And I think ICANN, to me, has a role in actually coordinating, if you like, that exchange of information.
Paul, let me follow up on a point you said. You made the note that there are very few government people in the room. In your travels, in your interactions with government officials, governments tend to be reactive institutions, not proactive. How do you get that level of engagement where they will come to the table, where this will be on the radar?
Well, one thing that has happened, frankly, in the last several years has been there's quite a dialogue going on among governments about the whole cybersecurity, cyber warfare thing. So it gets occasionally comes to the service or not. And there's been key voices trying to say to them, you know, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Be very careful about not, you know, the middle layer works in a different way. Be careful about it. And that voice needs to take place. But it can't be reliant upon, a single generation of people who've had that experience who are still in the system. I mean, there has to be... I think the community and you know, the GAC's a key part, but it's not just that. The GAC, it has to be the sort of the stakeholders have to be a voice saying we're doing the following things and get that message out and be a voice in every country. I take very much the point about the information sharing platform capability of this community.
Hi, I'm Kath Golding from Nominet. I'm very new to this environment, but I'm not new to the cyber threat. So apologies if my question seems a bit basic. But I'm used to sort of seeing national risk registers where it might be the threat from terrorism or even like a volcano in Iceland grounds all the aeroplanes in the UK for a time. So there's a national risk register, and that's quite comprehensive. And there's also a cybersecurity strategy that's starting to feed into that. And for me, it seems ICANN and the root DNS is an international threat. It's not on a... There is no international risk register. So for me, I think a great place... I don't know. Is there a risk register for the root DNS? And if not, would that be a good idea to feed into to governments to put into their national risk registers?
Yeah, okay. Okay. Yes.
Steve, are you running from the question?
Yeah.
No, I'm with apologies. I've got to be elsewhere.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to wish you a happy birthday, Steve.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
That's right. Dr. Crocker turned 17 today.
Yeah. So there are... on the route, there are exercises and there is games around contingency planning. There's quite a lot around the route. But remember, that's not the route operators. That's just the VeriSign, NTIA, ICANN route. So what the individual route operators do is what the individual route operators do. Sort of like you've seen one.
So from the perspective of someone who breaks into stuff, the root's awesome, but it's too big. It's
big in what way? Too many entries? Too many...
The root is not – when I think where is somebody going to attack the DNS, I actually don't think of the root for a number of reasons. One, they're actually incredibly well hosted, and there's not that many of them. Because of caching, not every request passes through them. I'd way rather break into VeriSign servers than break into the roots, like the comm servers specifically. There are things you can only say as the hacker in the room. But no, seriously, it's when I worry about what is someone going to attack in order to impact the DNS, the root is a sexy target, it's an interesting target, but it is not the primary target. The primary targets are going to be name servers for individual organizations that I want to impact, or the registrars or registries that are backing up those name servers, that are literally sending other systems to those particular machines. That's where you have less attention, more exposed. I mean, think about the services that the root servers expose. They expose root DNS, and generally that's about it. A remarkable amount of name servers on the internet today host more than just DNS. And once you get into the registrar and registry side, you have the entire web security semi-fiasco to worry about. So that's kind of my perspective on the issue.
Hi, my name is Amy Mushawar. I'm with Reed Smith, and I represent the Association of National Advertisers. Most certainly at this stage, we haven't vetted a security policy through our advertisers, but our group does represent a wide swath of national and U.S. and international brands. And we wanted to be on the record that our brands are extremely concerned about security. However, they're concerned not so much in the infrastructure status and not so much in understanding when a particular hack or denial of service has occurred. What we're really more concerned about is kind of the greater return on investment, and in that you can use the DNS itself, use the very few protections that we have in place with trademark protections and spoof names with no breach whatsoever. So, you know, we are looking at this, that the security team should be working with the BC and the IPC, we hope, and developing greater rights protections for new GTLDs because, you know, of course we're always concerned about the hack, but where you can have a return on investment absent a hack, we really need to be concerned about that as well.
I'm getting the cut signal over here, so it looks like we've run out of time. I think what's interesting is almost every person here has talked about the importance of stakeholder involvement and discussions like this continuing. So perhaps this panel or panel of this type can occur at the next meeting and keep occurring as this dialogue continues.
Yeah, can you ask, by a show of hands, how many people thought this panel was worthwhile? And so how many people think we should continue this or on a every other meeting or meeting basis? Okay, that means I'm expecting you guys to ask questions at the next one. And I'd just like to say a lot of us, we're here for the whole conference, and I'm especially approachable. If you have anything you want to say maybe privately to us or the security team, I'd love to talk to you. So thank you very much for participating.
You folks have been fantastic. Thank you very much.